is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
March Madness rolls on even as we flip the calendar to April, which means as well, it's officially draft month in the National Football League. We're diving into draft props, season win totals, and a whole lot more as we welcome you into this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Mike Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. How was the weekend, Michael? How we doing? Lots of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff going on. I was very happy for our man Elliot to see Purdue make their Final Four appearance. Thought the games were fun to watch. Happy that I had Alabama in the family contest to get to the Final Four, although I'm probably going to end up in third place because two people ahead of me have Connecticut winning, and they're ahead of me already on points. So, you know, I'll take third place as a defending champion. What can I do? But I was excited for that. Yeah, it was great. It was a good weekend. Today's a bad day. I mean, today's one of those days you don't look at anything. April Fool's is like, really, all the idiots come out. They all come out today. Like, oh, I got you on that one. Like, seriously, who invented April Fool's? That's what I would like to know.
I don't know, but I am with you that it makes me so angry because it doesn't register for me when I woke up this morning, right? I wake up, I get on the computer, I'm checking my email, get on Twitter, and I see Justin Jefferson getting traded to the Steelers. Dustin Sweetelson, our own VSiN host here, engaged? That's not, it's a fake Adam Schefter account. Oh, Dustin's messing with us once again. So yeah, April Fool's is the worst. Yeah. I hate it and I'm very gullible. So when people say stuff to me in person, I'm going to believe it. And it is a recipe for disaster, Michael.
A recipe, like seriously, like it's just, I saw the Dustin one and with the wedding ring there and I'm like, okay, enough is enough. Like, all right, you know, like seriously, I'm out. I'm not buying this one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, because you'd forget what day it is, right?
Absolutely.
You know, and then we have all these fake accounts out there that are people trying to get. I mean, there was an account where, you know, the Georgetown basketball coach resigned because he said the job was too hard. Like, seriously, like that, you're looking at that ain't right. Like, that can't be right.
Michael, there was a report from Shams.
It's a lot of play.
There was a report from Shams today that Joel Embiid is set to return maybe as soon as Tuesday against OKC. Was that real or was that fake?
I think that's fake. I mean, I'm sure Shams thinks it could happen, but on the real surface, there's no way. That's tomorrow. That's tomorrow. I haven't seen one video clip of him on a court yet. And I live in Philly. I watch the news every day. Not that there's much sports on the news the way it is now, but come on, there's no way.
You're the best. Okay, well, let's start off the show at least living in the world of reality and get into a little bit of the action that we saw this weekend. So much fun seeing how the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 unfolded. We have all of the Final Four teams officially, NC State versus Purdue. I am particularly excited to see that big man matchup of DJ Burns and Zach Edey down low in Alabama, as you referenced, taking on the UConn Huskies, where UConn has just barreled their way through this tournament, Michael, night in, night out, and we've got another huge spread in the Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, it's just been unbelievable, right? I mean, UConn goes on that 30-love advance in a game against a really good opponent, and Illinois gets taken out of the game. Their best player can't even get a shot off. Somebody sent me an email today who was at the game and watched UConn in person and basically said that, you know, watching them in person, it's a completely different level of intensity than you can even glean from watching them on TV, which I think is right because, as I've said many times, Stormy, they're playing to a standard. They're not playing to their opponent. They're playing to a standard. They're playing to something bigger than we have to win the game. And that line keeps getting extended further and further out there as a standard. And I disagree. They won't find the disease of me. They're not going to find the comfort. They're not going to be content. They're just keep pushing the envelope every single game. And the way they're going through these teams, it's somewhat remarkable. And look, I feel bad. You know, Alabama's going to go up against a buzzsaw and they're going to have to shoot lights out for 40 minutes, not for 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
You look at the shooting percentages in that game, Illinois from the floor, 25.4% from three, 26.1%. And you referenced their best player, Terrence Shannon, goes 2 of 12 from the floor in that game, where it's 23-23. And then you look up a couple minutes later and 53-23. It's just something remarkable. I'm not usually a math major. You know, I went to journalism school for a reason, but I did some of the basic math on what we've seen from UConn in the tournament so far. 4-0 straight up ATS, average margin of victory, 27.8 points, their closest win by 17. Start of last year's tournament, 10-0 straight up in ATS, average margin of victory, 23.1, closest win, 13 points. They're the first team since seeding began, Michael, in 1979 to cover 10 in a row. They're awesome. And so now with a big number like this, once again, against Alabama, do you think with the scoring capabilities that the Crimson Tide have that they can keep up? Or do you think that it's another blowout type win again for UConn because they haven't shown us anything different?
I can't imagine that Alabama is going to be able to shoot at that level for the consistent level that you're going to need to shoot from, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be very difficult. Look, I felt like, I don't know about you, I watched the game. I thought Clemson was going to win. With 4 minutes to go in the game, I thought Clemson was going to win. But Alabama made great shots down the stretch, three-point shots. They were able to close the game out. And I thought they showed me something that I didn't know they had. They showed me mental toughness. They were willing to accept the challenge. They were willing to handle it. And I thought it was really impressive. But you've got to be able to do that now for 40 minutes. Yeah. I mean, you can't back off that at all. And I think ultimately that's going to be the hard thing to do. The numbers always revert back to the mean. And I think Sears is a great player. And I think what Stevenson gave him off the bench was remarkable, right? And Pringle, who I think was the unsung hero of their win, they're going to have to play at another level. They're going to have to raise their game even one more level if they can. And look, they shot 44%. And they were able to beat Clemson, but beating Connecticut's going to require shooting better than 44%. This a little bit reminds me of Villanova playing Georgetown back in, what, 86, 85, where you're just going to have to play your absolute best, not for 30 minutes, but for 39.59 seconds.
UConn laying 12, total 161.5. Purdue, meanwhile, laying 9 against NC State, who has been everybody's favorite team, everybody's favorite player in DJ Burns. The Wolfpack have been awesome to watch since they ran their way through the ACC tournament to this point. Favorites, though, of 9-plus points in this tournament, which matches each of the games that we're going to see here in the Final Four, 15-4 against the spread. So these big favorites in the tournament have been covering at a high rate. Can Elliott's team get it done against the team everybody is rooting for this year?
Well, look, I tell you, what I thought watching Duke North Carolina State was I thought North Carolina State was a tougher team. You know, I thought North Carolina State said, okay, we're going to spar here in the first half, but the second half, those body punches are going to wear. They did. I mean, they were really good at what they were able to do. And NC State Middlebrooks, to me, was the physicality that came into the game. He played 26 minutes. You know, he collected 4 offensive rebounds. He was forceful in the game. And, of course, you know, we know Horn and Burns are really good, too. And I just thought North Carolina State's mental and physical toughness wore down Duke. Hmm. Duke was no match for it. And you could see that NC State was the, for lack of a better term, the more mature team, the older team, right?
Yeah.
And I think the other thing we learned, we yesterday we did the show and we talked about the line was 7. And we had JVT on, and we were talking about how do you handicap that? Well, you know, the line was 11 on a new – you go through all the different scenarios. But the scenario you can't really adapt for is who North Carolina State is today. And it goes back to what Aristotle said about analytics. You can't analyze anything that changes because you can't keep up with the change. And I think that's where we are with NC State. And I think NC State will be a tough out for Purdue, there's no question. They match him in size. Eddie's not going to have his way around the rim like he did yesterday against Tennessee. And they're going to have to, their guards are going to have to play really well to beat NC State.
They've been an underdog almost every step of the way. Like you said, a 7-point, 7.5-point dog in that game against Duke. They win by 12, plus 260 on the money line. They were 200-1 to make the Final Four an 11 seed, but one that does not feel like a fluke by any means. And now, Michael, NC State has both the men and women's programs that are going to the Final Four. Although I don't envy the matchup. They got South Carolina coming up next. UConn with a chance tonight to get the double-double with the men and women in the second game of a doubleheader tonight that might be the most anticipated in women's college basketball history. Iowa LSU and UConn LSC tonight. It's going to be awesome on the women's side of things.
Yeah. Wow, that rating is going to be incredible. I'm looking forward to watching it, right? I'm looking forward to watching it. I was surprised that am I right? Did I read that LSU is the dog in the game?
Correct. Yeah. 1.5, 2-point dog.
Yeah. The way West Virginia played Iowa with the intensity and denial of getting Caitlin Clark the ball. Mm. And it was a struggle, that West Virginia game for Iowa. It was a real struggle. You know, to me, makes me think that LSU can match that intensity and the way they're well-coached as they are. I thought West Virginia gave a formula to where a chance to beat them. I really do.
I'm with you. Iowa obviously went off in this past game against Colorado. They brought their A game through and through, but we know this is a rematch of last year's national championship where LSU won 102-85. LSU is on a mission. They know that they are the villain and they are embracing that a little bit. I'm excited for the back and forth. I'm excited for the trash talk. I think it's going to be great, but I'm with you. Listening to a lot of these like in-depth women's basketball analysts, they say, okay, Iowa might be the top seed. Iowa might be the favorite, but LSU feels like the favorite based on the complete, full, well-rounded talent that they have on that team. We are going to hit the break. When we come back, get into a little NFL draft conversation. Quarterback matchmaker on the way.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com website today on the homepage. March Madness Hubs previews for all the men's and women's games, best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, everything you need to become a more informed bettor. Check out VSiN.com today, which, by the way, we will get the book's perspective on everything that happened this weekend in college basketball and looking forward with Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, when he joins us a little bit later on this hour. Also in hour two, Jim Nagy will join us, executive director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, as we talk through a lot of these great prospects that are coming through. This is officially, we are in April, so it is draft month, Michael. And where I want to start here is we did an exercise earlier in the offseason, quarterback matchmaker, picking out a lot of the free agent quarterbacks and some of these prospects that are coming through in the draft and saying where we think is the best fit for these players. Well, a lot of the free agents have settled now. Let's look specifically toward the draft, not necessarily based on the lying season comments and the rumors, but where you feel genuinely is the best fit for a player. And we might as well, and again, once we pick a player for a certain team, no other player can go there anymore, right? So if you say Jaden Daniels to Washington, right, Washington's off the board. So we'll start at the top with the most obvious one, considering he's a minus 4,000 favorite to go number one overall to the Chicago Bears. But Caleb Williams, Michael, where do you think he is the best match? Where should he go?
Well, he's going to go to Chicago because he is the most talented player in the draft. He's not, you know, like all the guys in this draft, there's so much inconsistencies. And I would not call him a generational type player because there's too much inconsistencies in his play. There's some poor decisions. It just, you know, I mean, look, USC struggled to win. Now, it wasn't all his fault. Their defense was horrible. But I think the Bears, now the question really for the Bears is, what system do we want to have him operate best in? He's not, to me, a West Coast passer. He's more of a high-low reader on the outside. And I think ultimately play action, high-low reads, things like that, not RPOs. I don't, you know, the RPO game is slowly dying in the National Football League. But for me, it's his ability to run an offense from shotgun, use the intermediate passing game, not a West Coast, because I don't think his rhythm and his feet are always tied together, but high-low reads on the outside. And I think that's what Chicago's going to run. Look, one thing we do know about all these quarterbacks, they need a little bit of help. I mean, they're going to need some help from the supporting cast, and I think the Bears realize that.
And again, a huge favorite to do so, minus 4,000. You got to put up $4,000 just to win 100 back. The Commanders are sitting there plus 850, but the Bears, and we'll get into some season win totals a little bit later on in the show as well. Their win total, juiced to the over, by the way, sitting at 8.5. So a lot of high expectations after the 7-10 season with Justin Fields, that Caleb Williams and some of these other additions will turn things around for the organization. How about Jaden Daniels next? He is an odds-on favorite to go to the Washington Commanders right now, minus 160 the price. Is that the landing spot, or where do you think he fits best system-wise moving forward?
Well, I think with Kingsbury is going to run in Washington is what they run with for Kyler Murray in Arizona. You know, shotgun, not so more RPO with Murray. I think you definitely want to run some RPO with Daniel, but you got to keep him healthy. You don't want him getting hit too much. But because Daniels isn't a great anticipatory thrower, you've got to be able to run play action. You've got to be able to run those high-low reads on the outside and take advantage of his ability down the field. That's, to me, really important. So for hit me, I think what Kingsbury's going to do, he needs to be under center a little bit as well to run the hard play action to allow him to read it on the outside, read it on the inside. I think Kingsbury's fully the perfect offense for his skill set. Now, what about May and Kingsbury's offense? No, I think that's a little raw. I think May's going to need a little bit more, a different style of offense to best serve him, because when you watch the 20 to 21 tape or 22 tape, he throws with better rhythm than he does in 23. 23, he's all over the place and he's very inaccurate. I think it's yet to be declared what the best offense is for May, but I do think the best one for Daniels will be what Kingsbury runs in Washington.
And for those that were concerned after seeing the viral elbow photo from Jaden Daniels, he did come out and say, stop the cap. My elbow is perfectly fine. But yeah, coming off a 50 total touchdown season for Jaden Daniels, 40 through the air, 10 on the ground, 1,100 yards on the ground, a Heisman Trophy winning season. Teams are very excited about him, and rightfully so. The Commanders, again, minus 160, followed by the Patriots, who are picking in that third spot, plus 160. And then the odds fall off a cliff with the Vikings next there, 8-1. But let's go to Drake May, who you mentioned had a very different 2022 season than he did from 2023. He is plus 170 to be the number two pick. So you're getting plus money on that now, a place where he had been predicted to go throughout the course of this entire past calendar year. Minus 115 now to go 3, 8-1 to go 4, 20-1 to go 5. Where is the spot for Drake May, excuse me?
I think May is going to need to be in a system where it's almost West Coast-ish. Hard play action, run it. It's what Minnesota likes to run. Look, Minnesota got some productivity, whether it was with Dobbs for a couple games, you know, Nick Mullins. I mean, they're able to get some production. I think Kevin O'Connell would be a good coach for Drake May, because I think he'll be able to utilize his skill as an athlete, and he'll run a little bit of that West Coast where the ball's got to come out in time and they're going to force him to throw it to a certain spot. So I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota were to trade up to get him. I think there's a couple quarterbacks that fit that Minnesota. I think May fits it. I think McCarthy fits it as well. But I would say that O'Connell's system in Minnesota would be really the right place for May.
So in that thought process, Michael, should the Vikings trade up to get him, what number are they trading up to? Because, again, the Patriots, who sit 3, minus 115, but to go 4, 8-1, to go 5, 20-1, how far would they have to trade up to get him if that's the guy?
Well, I think that you got to believe, and I said this on Mitch and Pauly today, you got to believe that the Patriots are taking a quarterback, right? They have one quarterback on a one-year contract, Jacoby Brissett. They have nobody else. They have Bailey Zappe. You know, if they were content without getting a quarterback, they would have done exactly what the Raiders did, give $15 million to Gardner Minshew, have Aiden O'Connell, who's earned the right to start according to his head coach, you know, and then go from there. And so I think because there is a sense of a void on their depth chart next year, that it would incline me to see, well, maybe if we take May, redshirt him, we can get him up to speed. I think the question with May is a little bit the same question you asked about Anthony Richardson last year. How fast can we develop his skill set? And he's got a much better tapestry of tape than what Richardson had. I mean, the 22 tape, when he was the player of the year in the conference, is good enough, right? You got to get him to that. And I think ultimately that would be the case. I could see New England, because I don't know what New England's going to run. What will Van Pelt run? You know, what is he going to? He's a West Coast guy. That's what his background is, from Green Bay. All West Coast. That's what terminology and everything with that. If that's what he runs, May could do that. So you could put him there, and that would mean Minnesota would have to trade to four if they wanted to get McCarthy.
Okay. So, but you're saying right now, based for the sake of this exercise, that the Vikings would be the better landing spot versus New England.
I think so. Well, because Josh McCown's in Minnesota and he coached the kid. I mean, they know him better than anybody, right? And I think they probably can figure out his ceiling, which is the most important thing. What is his ceiling? Where can he go?
So I asked that question because the next player, obviously, that we're going to pull up in this conversation is J.J. McCarthy, where he is favored to go to the Vikings at an even money price. But the Vikings are off the board because that's where we like Drake May. So where would the best fit then be for J.J. McCarthy?
I think it would be New England if they move down, right? Okay. I think it would be New England if they move down because he is a West. To me, J.J. McCarthy is the true West Coast style of player. He has very good foot quickness. He's athletic. He can throw the ball in rhythm. He's got a sense of timing. He's got good leadership skills. He's, you know, inaccurate at times, but he can throw the ball with accuracy on all three levels. I think it would be the ideal guy if, you know, New England traded down, or if Minnesota traded up a little bit, or even if Denver tried to get up. I think there'll be competition to see if he's the last one remaining before we get to Nixon Penix. Then I think there'll be competition between the Denvers and maybe even the Raiders or some other team looking for a quarterback.
Okay. Again, Vikings, even money. Expect them to trade up to get a quarterback given the assets that they picked up from the Texans. The Giants, who are there at six, but also have talked about trading up not being out of the realm of possibility, plus 275. Washington also plus 275. New England plus 350. And the Broncos 7-1. How about Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr.? Where do you see them going?
Well, I think Bo Nix could be perfect for what Sean Payton wants to do. I think he's got really good foot quickness. I think he can throw the ball with rhythm. He's good accurately. I think he's smart enough to handle what Sean wants him to do at the line of scrimmage. The Michael Penix one's fascinating because if Al Davis were alive, Michael Penix would be the guy he would want to pick because he's incredibly accurate on the third level. He can make plays down the field, and he can run. And, you know, and Al has drafted left-handed quarterbacks in the past before. Some coaches don't like left-handed quarterbacks. You remember Todd Marinovich, left-handed quarterback. Kenny Stabler, left-handed quarterback. So he's been down this road before. Not that he's making these picks. But the deep ball would be enticing to him. And I think that's the Rams. I think it could be the Raiders as well.
The Raiders plus 320 to land Michael Penix Jr. Minnesota, the plus 250 favorite. Broncos are an even money number for Bo Nix. And first round quarterbacks over under 4.5. We'll be right back in Behind the Book with TG Thomas Gable when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. All you need to do is sign up at vsin.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in action, find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets, and where the money doesn't match that public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events each and every day as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. vsin.com/splits is how you can claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits page. Don't strike out on potential winnings. vsin.com/splits. Start making smarter bets today. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line. The Final Four is set. We got the big dogs in UConn and Purdue in the field. Alabama's a basketball school now since Nick Saban retired, and everybody's favorite Cinderella, the 11 seed NC State, make it through. This tournament has had it all. To help us break things down from behind the counter, we bring in on the Progressive guest line, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata. How'd y'all make out this weekend for the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight action? What's going on, TG?
I hope you all had a good Easter weekend, and now an April Fool's Monday, here we are. And it was a good weekend. It was a good 4 days there with the adding in the Sweet 16. We made out pretty well for all the games and some interesting matchups. Probably not the four teams many people would expect to be here. I think two of the teams we did with Purdue and Connecticut. They've been certainly the class of college basketball most of the season, and You know, the South region, though, you have a little bit of a shock there with NC State coming out of that region. And, you know, it was interesting, the Houston and Duke game, unfortunate for Houston there, just with bad luck with that injury that Jamal shed there at the end of the first half. And they just couldn't get it done there in the second half. And obviously Duke moves on. And then NC State continues their magical run here. And when you look at NC State, this is a team that, if you go back, they lost their last four games in a row of the regular season. They lost to Florida State, UNC, Duke, and Pitt. And then they went on that magical run in the ACC tournament. They won five games in 5 days, including wins against Duke and North Carolina in that. And then here they had Duke again in the Elite Eight, and they got the job done. But this team is playing at its best, that they've the highest power rating that they've had all season. So while it's been a nice thing, they do run into certainly one of the powerhouses of the 2023-2024 season in Purdue here. And while they are not quite a double-digit dog in that one, pretty much 9.5 everywhere, maybe a stray 9 out there, but they're going to have their work cut out for them. And, you know, with Purdue, I think, you know, Matt Painter obviously got the monkey off his back there and gets to a Final Four, but the job isn't done for them. They certainly want to get to the final here and face the winner of Alabama, Connecticut. And when you talk about Purdue, obviously all the attention is there is on Zach Edey, and a lot of attention is being paid now to how these games are getting officiated with him. I was on with Patrick and Dustin on Friday, and I said, you know, there were two games that I would have waited for in-game betting simply to see how the officials were going to call them. Was one was the Purdue game, and the other was the Houston and Duke game that night, because how these games are officiated is really going to go a long way to deciding things. So, you know, you've probably heard at this point, like basically on any play where Edey touches the ball, you can essentially call a foul if you want. And we saw him get to the line many times yesterday. Didn't shoot fantastic from the foul line, but certainly overall his numbers for the game were, you know, were monstrous, 40-point game. You know, NC State, again, how are they going to be able to defend him? Are they going to be able to defend him without getting into foul trouble? It's really, really difficult, and it's a problem that people have had all year long. And then when you look at the other matchup here with Bama and UConn on the other side, obviously UConn is just this juggernaut at this point, again, playing to their highest power rating that they've been all season. I mean, they're looking truly like one of the all-time great college basketball teams, whether you're thinking of, you know, early 1990-91 UNLV or some of those Kentucky teams. This team is just on another level right now. And Bama, obviously, we know with this team, they have such a high variance in terms of, you know, it really depends on how they're shooting the three. They take a ton of threes. They play with a lot of pace. They like to get up and down the floor. They don't use a lot of shot clock typically. And I've watched a ton of Alabama games this year. This was a team that I was on a lot in the beginning of the season. I didn't think that the market power rating was really caught up to how they were playing. And then I was on a lot of totals with them. Obviously, they play a lot of games to the over this year. But you know, I really didn't like the form that they were in coming into the NCAA tournament. Certainly, they proved me wrong. Here they are. They made it to the Final Four. Michael, I don't know if Bill Berman's there helping out Nate Oates this week in preparation for this game, but they're going to need everything in their bag of tricks here to even keep it within the number against UConn.
No question. And, you know, but UConn just seems to be so relentless. And you talk about officiating. Klingman, I mean, he never got called for a foul, whereas every time Eddie went to touch somebody touched Eddie, they got called for a foul. So it's going to be interesting how Alabama handles this in terms of, will they try to do the Rick Barnes and keep going to the rim, or are they going to back off and just rely on their three-point shot, which is something I think they should do, because the Tennessee strategy, Stormy, I thought was like, what are we doing? This guy's blocking every shot. They're not calling any fouls. You're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. Bama plays pretty much one way, and they're going to shoot a ton of threes. We'll see, if they're making them or not. They're going to have to be making a high percentage in order to stay in this game. I don't know if they have the talent level to upset this UConn team with the way that UConn's playing right now. I said the other day, it's going to take an A-plus effort from somebody to beat UConn, but UConn's going to have to probably give up a B-minus effort. I just don't know if they have a B-minus effort at this point. I mean, they're kind of the straight A team right now and just showing no weaknesses whatsoever.
Yeah, TG, with that, they've won and covered their last 10 games in the NCAA tournament dating back to last year. The closest win that they have had is by 13. We have an 11.5, 12-point spread in this spot. So let's say they win again, it's another blowout, and they get mm-hmm. Purdue. Can you give me a hypothetical spread in that case? If Purdue wins by, let's say, 8 in this game.
I would make UConn 4, 4.5 against Purdue right now.
Wow.
That's how good UConn is playing right now. I just think that they are on another level at this point. All season long, I had UConn, Purdue, Houston pretty much within a point and a half of each other in my power ratings. That's how much UConn has separated themselves from Purdue at this point. They're showing no weakness whatsoever, and they're taking no prisoners.
How about tonight, women's game? Tremendous mm-hmm. amount of attention, well-deserved. LSU, Iowa, two star players. Is the action in the book matching the interest from outside the book?
Yes. I certainly believe this is going to be the most wagered on women's college basketball team that we've ever seen. And not really surprising, right? I mean, you have a rivalry here. You have players that move the needle in terms of the interest. You have casual fans who are casual bettors that are coming in to place wagers on in this game. So I think the handle's already trending tremendously high. I think it's just till 7 o'clock tip off here tonight. It's going to be great. I really think this game is probably going to set a record for the highest handled college women's game.
Quickly, TG, because we're against it, is Iowa favored because they're the better team right now, or are they favored because of the Caitlin Clark effect?
I think they are the better team in terms of power rating slightly, but Caitlin Clark, I wouldn't say that there's any sort of tax in this game with Caitlin Clark. Just this one's strictly on the power rating.
TG, you're awesome. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
All right, thank you.
That's Thomas Gable.
Thanks,
director
TG.
Of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City via the Progressive guest line. And yeah, the interest, the ratings, and the betting handle on the women's basketball tournament increasing like crazy over the last couple years and will come to a peak tonight in the rematch of last year's national championship. We're going to hit the break. Coming back with Bettor's Choice NFL Win Total Edition next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are wrapping up hour one on the Lombardi Line. With that, remember, there's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive with our promo code Lombardi for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. And again, use that code Lombardi when you sign up. That earns you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. And there are NFL win totals up now across the board for all 32 teams. Alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. And let's do, Michael, a little better's choice exercise, if you will. A would you rather. So I'm going to give you a couple teams that have the same win total. And I want you to tell me, would you rather bet this team or this team? And we're going to start with your favorite team in the entire league, the New York Ifers, ladies and gentlemen. Yes.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, Michael, over the weekend had another big time acquisition in Hassan Reddick from the Eagles in exchange for a conditional third round pick.
Right.
So would you rather take the New York Ifers, a.k.a. the Jets for inquiring minds, over 9.5 at even money, or the up and coming Houston Texans over that same win total, -110?
I would rather take the Houston Texans over 9.5 because the Ifers, and they're called the Ifers for a specific reason. If everything goes well, can they win 10 games? If Tyron Smith stays healthy, if Mike Williams stays healthy, if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, if their offensive line plays better, if you start adding up too many ifs, you have something to worry about. So because of that, I would rather take a team that I believe has improved through the offseason and expect C.J. Stroud to continue to improve and go over his win total at 9.5.
Texans were 10-7, of course, this past year, punched their ticket to the postseason, winning the division for the Jets. Second straight season that this is their win total number, Michael. Obviously, they finished 7-10 this past year. The last time their win total prior to last season was 9.5. Was 2011 when they were coming off consecutive conference championship appearances. And our guy Elliot, the good man that he is sitting in the producer's chair, did a little research for us that you have this 13 season playoff drought. The last two playoff wins for the Jets were against Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, Michael. That's how long it's been.
Wow.
Peyton Manning with the Colts, mind you.
He's already in the Hall of Fame, so he's waited his 5 years. So think about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Think about that.
So we go from the Jets, who are Super Bowl or bust, to another team that has made it clear they have that mentality in the Dallas Cowboys. Their season win total sitting at 10.5, coming off three straight 12-win seasons. Would you rather take Dallas at even money or the Green Bay Packers, another up-and-coming young team, to go over 10.5 at an even better plus money price, +130?
I'm taking the Packers here over 10.5, not thinking twice. This is a complete instant reaction. I don't know if I would bet the Packers separately over 10.5 because of the depth and the uncertainty of what Minnesota is going to do at quarterback, right? I think Minnesota's improved their team. But there's very few teams, as we go through this exercise, that the draft is going to impact their win total. It's only going to be the teams that the quarterback comes in and plays, like Stroud came in and played well. Could happen like Bryce Young came in and didn't play well. Could happen that Anthony Richard plays and gets hurt. We understand that. But that will affect the number. Here, I think I look at this and say, Detroit's better. I think Minnesota can be better, right? I think Chicago will be better. We know they're taking a quarterback, and they will be better passing the football. So that 10.5 isn't a reflection I don't like the Packers. It's I think the competition's going to be stronger. Meanwhile, there's nothing I like about what Dallas has done this offseason. I think Washington hasn't had a great offseason, but they're going to get a quarterback. That's going to help. Okay, Philadelphia's improved their team, right? The Giants remains to be seen what they do. I don't think they'll take a quarterback. I know what John Mara said about if they see one graded that they like high enough, they'll take him. I don't know. I mean, they've been working out and going to dinner with every quarterback, so that might be a different story. But I think, to me, the Cowboys are headed the reverse way. I would bet they're under. That's why I'm going in this scenario with the Packers.
And it depends on, you know, what you or anybody thinks about that prove it year for Dak Prescott, again, by the way, and his head coach and Mike McCarthy, both in the final years of their contracts. How about this next one? Now, these numbers are both juiced a little bit, so paying a bit of a tax, which I know is never fun when you are betting these season-long win total futures, but the Browns over 8.5 at -120 or the Jacksonville Jaguars over that number at -125. What's the choice here?
This is a hard one. I think I would go with the Browns over the 8.5 here because I think the Browns will be better on defense this year on the road, which will help. I like both of these teams over their 8.5 win total. I really do. I'm picking the Browns only because I have more confidence in their defense. And if Nick Chubb's back, I'm struggling with Trevor Lawrence's inconsistencies, his decision-making. And then with the new defensive coordinator, Ryan Nelson, I think they're going to be better in Jacksonville on defense. But how much better will they truly be? We'll see.
Both of these quarterbacks you have significant questions about, right? Like last year with Trevor Lawrence, the way things played out, and Deshaun Watson, not only the health factor, but even when he is healthy, what are you going to get? We don't really know consistently at this point. Let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals, who, you know, they had their quarterback go down this past year as well. But Joe Burrow coming back healthy, their win total set at 10.5, or Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills over 10.5. Michael, theirs is juiced -145, Cincinnati -120. What's the choice?
I'm going to take Buffalo here because I think the AFC East is down, right? I think the AFC East is down. I think this is strictly about taking the lesser division here. It has nothing to do with that. I don't think Bengals can be over 10.5. I do. But when you're asking this or that, I'm going to take Buffalo only because I don't know if the ifers are going to be good because of the ifers. New England will be better, but how much better? And I think Miami has taken a huge step backwards defensively. Then they still have two guys, Jaylen Phillips and Bradley Chubb, coming off a knee injury. So there's a lot of uncertainty in Miami. And as we saw Miami play against good teams, you know, they struggled. They really struggled. And so what have they done to improve that? Have they made their offensive line better? No. I mean, their left tackle is still going to be Armstead, and he's an ifer. He would be perfect for the Jets because he doesn't play all the time.
Even their backup quarterback is an iffer when you go to the Jets. Even their backup quarterback is an iffer.
I mean, Tyrod Taylor can't. I don't think he's going to be able to stay healthy. But Miami, okay, they signed Aaron Brewer. Okay, great. Aaron Brewer, you're signing linemen from the Titans who couldn't block anybody. That's a problem. So I don't know where they've gotten better. You know, and they've been fortunate. Tyreek Hill's now on the other side of 30. Is he going to stay healthy? That's the key. You know, the Jets are the ifers, but there's a lot of question marks in Miami. Defensive tackle, replacing Christian Wilkins, going to be hard, right? You know, they got to replace an inside linebacker. Can Jordan Brooks come through for them? We'll see. And can they stay healthy? And here's the thing that bothers me. They all were happy that Vic left. Well, Vic was pushing them to get somewhere, right? Vic was the taskmaster, and they didn't like that. Well, here's what we do know. To win a championship and to be an elite team, you're going to need somebody to push you to another level.
All great points, Michael. And in terms of Buffalo, I'll give you one more to support your thoughts here. Since Sean McDermott has been the head coach in Buffalo, they have gone over their season win total all seven seasons, longest active streak in the NFL. You mentioned that you think the New England Patriots are going to be better, but how much better? Head-to-head with the Carolina Panthers, both their win totals sitting at 4.5. Who would you rather place the wager on?
I think I'm going to place it on New England only because I have faith in New England's defense. I think New England will be as good, if not better, on defense. I mean, they're bringing guys back. Judon wasn't healthy last year, and they played good defense. They'll be better at the corner situation than they were. They get Christian Gonzalez back, who looks dynamic and going to be a hell of a corner, right? So I think they have a chance to really improve, plus a draft to improve. And Brissett's going to give them some confidence. What I'm shocked is they haven't even tried to sign a kicker yet. I mean, they have Ryland still on the team as the kicker, and nobody cost more wins in that area than he did. They need a left tackle. That's what they need badly. They have the right tackle, but they need a left tackle. Hey, look, if they don't draft a quarterback, they could draft a left tackle from Notre Dame all. I mean, if that's what they wanted to do. But for me, I don't see how they do that based on their depth chart.
This is the Patriots' lowest preseason win total since 1991. That was set at 4. They finished that year 6-10. We'll see if they get over once again. One more here. The Pittsburgh Steelers. Would you rather bet them to have a winning season yet again under Mike Tomlin, over 8.5, or the Chicago Bears to get over 8.5?
I'm going Tomlin here every day of the week. I mean, what more does Tomlin have to do to get some respect? He goes over his win total every year. 8.5, he got 10 wins last year, and we couldn't even know who was playing quarterback. Come on.
Yep, 10-7 last year. They finished 500 or better in 20 straight seasons, 1 year shy of matching the longest streak in NFL history. The Dallas Cowboys had a stretch of 21 straight from 1965 to 1985. We're going to hit the break here when we come back, resetting with hour two. What's on Michael's mind and the odds for the Final Four in the men's tournament? We'll be right back.